Welcome to Life in Debt, your practical debt education program. This is bankruptcy attorney Robert Litak. I'm speaking from Crew LP 100.1 FM, the voice of Fairfield, Iowa, an award-winning, listener-supported, open-source grassroots community radio station broadcasting from the Cultural District in Fairfield. Please note that these presentations are provided as a public service for general information purposes only and are not intended to be legal opinions, legal advice, or complete discussions of any legal issues. Remember, every individual's factual situation is different, and you should seek independent legal advice from an attorney familiar with the laws of your state or locality regarding specific information. The name of this show is Life and Debt, and it is a weekly half-hour educational show looking at all types of issues related to debt as it influences your life. This show provides practical, general knowledge about what to look for regarding debt, what are its traps and pitfalls, and what to do to be an educated debtor. Please get some notebook, paper, and pen so you can take notes during the show. As is always, we first look at some debt-related news and facts for the week. As we look at the news, one thing that is happening recently is that at first we saw the subprime mortgages go into foreclosure on default, and then it moved up to the middle value risk kinds of mortgages, the Alt-B mortgages, and then the Alt-A mortgages for consumer residential home loans, right up to the really prime mortgages. There are defaults occurring in those situations. And that is because a lot of people are losing good jobs, or on the other hand, the value of properties are diminishing and people are trying to get out in places like California and Florida, where the markets are flooded with houses for sale and the mortgage foreclosure numbers are astronomical. But on the other side, this is also starting to affect the commercial properties, as commercial property loans are starting to default. For example, from the San Francisco tower owners, the owners of a premier San Francisco office tower plan to forfeit the property to their lenders, the city's second distressed transaction involving a major commercial building in recent weeks. Hines and Sterling American Property decided to transfer their interest in 333 Bush Street to the original financiers following the surprise dissolution of the law firm Heller Erman in September. The 118-year-old law firm defaulted on its 250,000-square-foot lease, leaving the nearly 550,000-square-foot property 65% vacant. Hines and Sterling bought the tower for $281 million in 2007, near the top of the market, when it was 75% leased. The partnership is handing the property to Brookfield Real Estate Finance and Munich Hypobank. More distressed deals are expected. Nearly three-quarters of Class A office buildings downtown in San Francisco sold between 2005 and 2007. Probably another half-off sale, or worse, is coming up. It is amazing that 75% of downtown San Francisco Class A office buildings were sold between 2005 and 2007. Walking away in cities like San Francisco, which is by the bay, are becoming more common. At least in that kind of city, it's a nice place to take a walk. In other news, a newspaper report says that Bank of America Corp's CEO, Ken Lewis, is planning to shrink the bank's 6,100 branch network by about 10%. Looking more into the U.S. efforts to modify mortgages, from a Wall Street Journal report by Ruth Simon, that attempt is faltering. An Obama administration effort to reduce home foreclosures by lowering the mortgage payments of struggling borrowers before they fall behind is failing to help as many people as expected. Among the problems, some homeowners are being told they must be behind on their payments to receive help, which runs counter to the aim of the program. In other cases, delays are so long that borrowers who are current on their payments when they ask for a loan modification are delinquent by the time they receive one. There is also confusion about who qualifies. Government administration officials have summoned executives of 25 mortgage servicing companies to Washington next week to discuss efforts to help borrowers, both delinquent and at risk. Among the items on the table, what steps the companies should take to increase and speed up modifications. According to Assistant Treasury Secretary Michael Barr, he says we've made good progress, but in our judgment, servicer performance is insufficient and varies quite significantly. Helping at-risk borrowers is one of the items I think we can do better on. The Obama administration in February laid out its foreclosure prevention plan to much fanfare. One part of the program provides financial incentives for mortgage servicing companies to reduce loan payments to affordable levels, not just for people already in trouble, but also for those who are at risk of falling behind because of a change in their circumstances. So far, more than 200,000 borrowers who are delinquent or at risk of default have received trial modifications, the first step. Administration officials said the modification program could eventually help 3 million to 4 million people. Lisa Sitkin, a staff attorney with Housing and Economic Rights Advocates in Oakland, California, said she was pleased when help for at-risk borrowers was announced. However, quote, "It's disturbing to see that it is several months later and it's still not up and running at any scale that is meaningful." Mortgage servicing companies said they were fully committed to the administration's plan. Bank of America Corp. is only this month beginning to implement the Obama plan for all at-risk borrowers, a company spokesman said. Bank of America has been putting such borrowers on a plan that allows them to make a partial mortgage payment for several months and then be considered for a loan modification. Wells Fargo and Company didn't begin offering some at-risk borrowers loan modifications under the Obama plan until early June. One issue was that mortgage companies were waiting for final federal guidelines on key issues, such as how to determine whether a loan modification is preferable to a foreclosure, said Mary Coffin, head of loan servicing for Wells Fargo Home Mortgage. She said, "We do realize that the last 90 days have been frustrating. In June, nearly 40% of borrowers seeking a loan modification with Wells weren't yet delinquent, up from nearly 10% at the end of 2008. Some borrowers say they are being told to stop making loan payments and seek a modification later. Alicia Gorder of Bridgeport, Connecticut, was referred to Oraton Solutions, a federally approved housing counselor, after she called a mortgage industry hotline because she wasn't getting anywhere with her mortgage company. Ms. Gorder has been struggling to make ends meet because sales have slid at her children's boutique, and her husband, Christoph, who runs disaster relief programs for the nonprofit AmeriCares, had to take a 21% cut in compensation." An Oraton employee said in a letter to Ms. Gorder in mid-July, "Stop paying on the mortgage since you don't have the resources to cover all your expenses." The letter advised Ms. Gorder to focus on basic living expenses and to follow up with the lender after she had increased her income. Ms. Gorder said she was stunned. "To be told I should do something to put my family in this risky position doesn't make sense," she said. "I had a lot of faith in the system. For me, it's really shocking and jarring to see that the system doesn't work." Oraton President Tiff Worley called the letter poorly worded, but he added that the letter correctly recognizes that this person has an upside-down budget situation and is still shorting things to her family every month. Employees at mortgage servicing companies often tell borrowers they can't be helped if they are current on their loans. Also, other borrowers complained of long waits for help. For example, Suzanne Denick of New Jersey said J.P. Morgan Chase & Company told her it would take 4 to 6 weeks for her modification request to be assigned to an analyst and another 90 days to 120 days before she received a decision. The company also asked her to resend her application, further delaying the process. She said that July was the last month we have savings to pay our mortgage. A J.P. Morgan spokeswoman acknowledged that the process took more than our typical time frame, but added that it took some time for us to receive a completed and signed paperwork package from the borrower. Once paperwork is complete, it typically takes 30 to 60 days to determine whether a modification is possible. Meanwhile, there's plenty of confusion about just who is eligible for help. Given widespread public misexpectations, a significant percentage of borrowers seeking home affordable modifications under the imminent default provisions will not qualify, said a Bank of America spokeswoman. Mortgage companies say that to be considered at risk of imminent default, borrowers must typically have liquid reserves that amount to less than 3 months of mortgage-related payments, and after figuring in expenses, a few hundred dollars or less left at the end of each month. If you are just tuning in, this is bankruptcy attorney Robert Liptak, and this program is Life in Debt, your practical debt education program. I'm speaking from Crew LP 100.1 FM, the voice of Fairfield, Iowa, and beyond. And we had just gone over an article by Ruth Simon at the Wall Street Journal about the current major mortgage modification program being offered through the government administration and the fact that it seems to have a lot of glitches attached to it. I personally have seen very little effect from the program in clients' lives, and the National Listserv of bankruptcy attorneys is for the most part indicating the same lack of substantial results for its clients. So with that in mind, let's move on to some ways to deal with your debt personally. I want to start with the credit to Professor Elizabeth Warren from Harvard and her daughter Amelia Warren Tyagi, who are two of America's leading champions for debtors, as the thoughts, ideas, and examples used in these series of programs are directly from or based on the work, theories, and books of those outstanding scholars in this area. I highly recommend their books, All Your Worth and The Two Income Trap. And I also suggest that people go back to the archives at www.kruufm.com, the Life in Debt section, so you can get a full and complete review of all of the principles that have been taught in these radio shows, which are filled with very practical points of knowledge and formulae to help you to deal with debt and to make a budget that is useful, particularly considering the challenges in our current economy. In the last few shows, I've been talking specifically about Chapter 7 bankruptcies and some Chapter 13 bankruptcy issues. And these are, of course, issues for people who are in extreme debt problems and need to have some help. Up to speaking about Chapter 7, we were trying to get everyone dealing with their debt problems or preventing debt problems without having to, in essence, reboot their financial system. But it is inevitable that for about 1.5 million American families this year, a reboot is necessary. So a Chapter 7 and a Chapter 13 for consumers are important legal processes that help people to get a fresh start. Last week in particular, I was going over some points that if a person is considering the need for bankruptcy within the next 6 months, there are certain points of do not do this and certain points of do this that should be implemented. In fact, failure to follow some of these points may result in a delay, significant expense, or loss of property in a bankruptcy case. It may even in some cases result in bankruptcy relief being denied by the court. So it's important to think of these points if bankruptcy is on the horizon. But in truth, these often are very practical points for just about everybody in today's economy to protect themselves and establish a very stable budget. So some do not points are do not use credit cards anymore. There are some very strict rules about using credit cards too close to bankruptcy, particularly for cash advances, convenience checks, and for luxury purchases. So essentially, we keep away from credit cards. However, as I have pointed out on many shows in the past, I would like everyone to keep away from credit cards, knowing what I know about the way credit card companies function and looking at what they're doing right now, booting up everyone's interest rate, just about everyone, to its maximum amount and reducing credit lines for many people. And these have very, very overwhelming influences on people's finances and also their credit rating score. Another thing that is a do not point is do not use payday loans, as this creates a morass of problems for people. And also, when you look at the interest rate for taking a payday loan, it does not make any financial sense. It's hundreds of percent, up to even 1,000% at times. Now, if one is filing a bankruptcy, one should not be paying any unsecured creditor more than $600 in the 3 months before filing, because this is a preference. One is favoring some creditor over other creditors. We just don't do that. And it is typical that once an individual hires a legal representative, they're usually told that you don't want to pay any unsecured debt anymore, except for those things that are current contemporaneous needs, like utilities, rent, and things of that nature. But you should seek out legal advice about that. Another important point we mentioned was do not borrow money without discussing it with your attorney before filing bankruptcy. This could have some ramifications that you do not like if you have to file. In particular, you don't want to pay back any loans to family members, partners, or other kinds of insiders for actually up to a year before filing bankruptcy, because that could result in the trustee from the bankruptcy case looking to that insider and asking for the money back. Another thing that we don't want to do is transfer any property for less than full market value. This is a very typical misunderstanding situation where people say, oh, I don't have the money to pay back certain debts, I need to file bankruptcy, but I do have this asset, some vehicle, some piece of property, and I'll just transfer that to my son, to my friend, something like that, and not get paid fully for it. That, of course, is a kind of fraudulent transfer, trying to hinder, delay, avoid, or defraud your creditors, and is not acceptable. Any kind of transfer, you should definitely discuss that with an attorney if you are in a bankruptcy posture or if that transfer itself would make you insolvent and no fair market value was coming back in. Another thing that people often think they can do is just take a bunch of assets and pay down secured loans. Some of that may be possible, but it's not just something that you can just take all this cash you have and pay down the principal on your house or pay off of a car and then quickly turn around and file bankruptcy, feeling that those pieces of property are exempt. The exemption certainly is there, but a massive pay down is a transfer that would be questioned in many cases by a trustee in a bankruptcy. So it has to be done with the right amount of balance to it. And of course, that takes professional help in getting you to do that properly. Often people just generally try to hide their assets if they're feeling the pinch of creditors hounding them and harassing them. And this is really not something that you can do either if you're going to file bankruptcy, but even under most states' laws, you have to be very careful about how you're moving your property around or what you're doing with it if you are insolvent or imminent to being insolvent. So you have to be cautious. On the other side, people are often in the position to accept gifts from family members, friends, whomever, and then they're also about to file bankruptcy. So the general do not rule is to accept any gift of significant value prior to your bankruptcy case being filed without talking to your attorney. If you're just tuning in, this is bankruptcy attorney Robert Liptak, and this program is Life and Debt, your practical debt education program. I'm speaking from Crew LP, 100.1 FM, the voice of Fairfield, Iowa, and beyond. And I've been talking about points of caution if somebody is in an insolvent circumstance and bankruptcy is looming in their life. Even as I just said, taking a substantial gift could be a mistake right before one is about to file bankruptcy, and one needs to get counseling on that. And the last point that I actually made last week is that one should not get married or separated or divorced right before filing bankruptcy without discussing with an expert the ramifications financially of doing that, how the law will affect the new circumstances in the couple's lives, either as they join together or as they segregate from each other. In general, the law gives a lot of protection to assets, but it's often counterintuitive. People think they can do something with their assets and they make the wrong choice, whereas if they did something else, which both federal and state law allows, then they're totally protected. One of my primary examples of that is cashing out or taking loans from 401k or IRAs or other retirement plans and then filing bankruptcy. This turns out to be a mess in most states. Not only is there the tax and penalty losses for doing such a thing, but in fact, there are some arguments that that is considered income and it gets included under the new law in what is called the means test, and it could be completely obstructive to what you're trying to accomplish. And in truth, I said before that these kinds of plans aren't savings accounts and they really should not be used like that. They should be left alone. Professor Warren agrees with that wholeheartedly. Once you start it, you leave it, and that's for your retirement. You got to get through these other issues. And frankly, for example, in a state like Iowa, if you have a massive 401k plan and lots of money in it from over the years, and yet you have to file bankruptcy, that plan is exempt. That fund is not going to be touched in bankruptcy or even out of bankruptcy by your creditors. So it's not a kind of savings account that can be levied on. So you just leave it be. It's a very good thing to have there. But many, many people do this when the going gets tough and then they start paying back the loan, which they're obligated to do. And then they find themselves in a bankruptcy situation, and the monthly payment or repayment of that loan is not going to be as easily allowable as an expense as one may think it should be. So it puts one at risk from being in a liquidation chapter 7 into a chapter 13 repayment plan, which may not be nearly as useful. So the bottom line is, don't mess with your 401k plans, your retirement plans, your IRAs, cashing them out or taking loans from them. Another general point in the do not category is you do not do anything that in fact would delay, hinder, or defraud a creditor from collecting the debt you owe. You file a bankruptcy and that stops all of that, but if you start moving things around or trying to hide things, that can get you in trouble. And frankly, does not ultimately protect the things that you're trying to keep from your creditors. Another thing that you have to be very cautious about doing is making balance transfers on credit cards right before you're trying to file a bankruptcy. This could lead to some challenges and additional costs in your bankruptcy because a credit card company could file an adversarial complaint saying that this was a kind of a fraud. In addition, if you're planning to file a bankruptcy, you don't go on telling creditors you intend to pay. What you do is you retain an attorney and then you direct that creditor to your attorney who represents you and let that attorney give that creditor a full and clear presentation of what's happening and what they cannot do to you. And of course, get that bankruptcy filed and the federal court order will stop anything they try to do to you in a legal sense. Once you tell a creditor you intend to pay, they continue to harass you. They are constantly calling you. They want you to sign agreements and confessions of judgment, which they would then just put of record in court. None of this is really to your benefit. Another issue regarding bankruptcy is tax refunds or inheritances. These, for many people, are great. They're often in the thousands of dollars for tax refunds and really could be unlimited kinds of inheritance. But if one is about to get these, then the idea that one is going to file a bankruptcy right before it is not good. And if one's going to file a bankruptcy right after it, one needs to discuss this kind of circumstance with a professional so one can time the filing correctly. One does not want to lose one's tax refund or inheritance, so it has to be thought out in advance. Now, regarding the house or homestead situation, one would not purchase a home shortly before filing bankruptcy without consulting their attorney. It's possible under some circumstances to do that, particularly if it's a rollover from a prior homestead, but it could be that one is creating equity that is not protected by debt that preceded creating that equity. So it's kind of a technical issue, but think about it. This is why the bankruptcy is a great fresh start. It's a great reboot, but one has to think clearly through the asset situation before one files. Another thing would be, for example, taking a second mortgage on the house. This often is really not good anyway. But right before filing bankruptcy to pay something down or to use that money for something else that is new, a vacation, a student college tuition. In many cases, people are just taking this really protected value of their home equity and using it in such a way that it's left unprotected. The unsecured debt gets paid or some new challenge is created. And yet the mortgage itself is putting your homestead at risk, which is not good in most circumstances to ever be in that kind of situation. So I'll stop there and I'll continue next week with some more do not points. This is bankruptcy attorney Robert Liptak, and you have been listening to Life in Debt, your practical debt education program. If you have any questions or comments, call the station at 641-209-1083, or you can email me at lifeindebt@gmail.com. I'm speaking from Crew LP 100.1 FM, the voice of Fairfield, Iowa, and beyond. May you enjoy and have a healthy and prosperous debt-manageable life.